Welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host. This week, I am joined by Lee Huffman from Bald Thoughts, a fellow boarding area blogger, a longtime friend of mine, and someone I'm really excited to talk to. He has a lot of good stuff to share. Welcome to the show, Lee.
It's great to be here, bud. Good to talk to you. I know you're traveling all over the place, and good to be able to have you in one spot a little bit for us to be able to talk.
Yeah, no, it's I'm at home right now, headed to Japan next week, so I'm excited about that, but I'm glad we could get this done. And this will actually come out when I'm in Japan. So I'm kind of trying to get ahead of myself just a little bit with recordings. But I've been wanting to talk to you for a while because I feel like you are somebody who's in all kinds of different areas of the miles and points space. When did you start Bald Thoughts?
I started in December 2012. At the time, I was working in corporate finance for a bank. And my job all day, every day was Excel and occasionally a PowerPoint. And, you know, I mean, it gets a little boring sometimes. My wife and I, we were traveling a lot using the Southwest Companion Pass, using our timeshares, using SPG points, you know, rest in peace. So we were traveling a lot, and people just kind of assumed because I was making good money at the bank that that's how I was able to afford the traveling. And, you know, there weren't as many like travel blogs back in the day and everything. And so I said, look, if you know me, I'm frugal. I'm not gonna spend all this money for all these trips. But let me show you how it's done. And that's really where I started. I was like showing people like, look, you can do this stuff. You know, and especially you know at the time our son was almost 2 years old, and I'm like, look, you know, all the different trips that we take and being able to create the memories with him and creating the memories just my wife and I traveling together. The kids grow up quick. I mean, you know that with all your kids, right? And I feel a lot of families, they wait to be able to travel because one, it's expensive for a lot of them. And they're like, oh, I don't want to travel when they're too young because they're not going to remember it. And if we're going to spend all this money, we want them to be able to remember it. But I kind of look at it the opposite way. It's like, yeah, they may not remember it, but in the moment, they are going to have like the best time ever. Like, my son does not remember our first trip to Paris. He was about 26 months old and he was running around like a madman chasing pigeons in front of the Louvre. You know, he was like, that was like the peak of happiness for him chasing all those birds. And does he remember it? Absolutely not. But my wife and I still chuckle about it. You know, we got video of it. You know, we take some pictures and everything else. And like those memories we're going to have for our lifetime. And if you wait too long, all of a sudden they become like grumpy teenagers, right? And they don't want to travel with you. Like, hey, we're going to go see penguins like on the coast of like southern coast of Australia. You want to go? Nah. I want to go to the mall with my friends.
Yeah.
I'm like, really?
It's, you know, it's crazy. I have a 22-year-old, so I've gone through all of that. And obviously in his teenage years, didn't travel. And then my daughter's now 8. And a similar thing, like I remember her first birthday, we were at Disneyland Paris and we were in Paris and Spain. And what a great trip that was for us. And we've actually taken her back as she's gotten older. And even though she obviously doesn't remember being 1 year old, but that was an amazing set of memories for us. And then we've sort of infused those memories onto her because we have pictures and videos. And as she goes back, now that she does remember it and she has a relationship with that city, being there on her first birthday is actually very important to her. And so, yeah, I totally agree with you. And, you know, travel isn't just about giving them the memories, right? It's about giving yourself the memories, getting that time to spend as a family and, you know, doing that outside of the norm, which, you know, it can become monotonous. And parenthood isn't always easy when you have little ones and taking them somewhere else and then just getting the joy of watching them run out around chasing pigeons. That's pretty cool.
Well, that and the other thing is also like, you know, as both of us being fathers and husbands, the other aspect of it is, sometimes you're stuck paying for daycare and diapers and formula and all the other stuff like that. And it gets crazy expensive. And if you don't like keep track of things, it's easy to kind of forget about creating those like special times with just you and your spouse. Right. And when you are paying all those expenses, it's sometimes like, we really should do like a couple's trip, just us to kind of reconnect and everything. But you can't because you're paying car payments and you're paying student loans and you're paying a mortgage and you're paying daycare and all that stuff. But using those miles and points, like, hey, you know what? Let's just get away for the weekend. We're going to have grandma come watch the kids. You know, we're going to take a quick flight down to the Caribbean or whatever. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be that far, right? It could be anywhere. Or even just a staycation, like, in your city at a nice hotel. But if you didn't have the miles and points, carving out those dollars to be able to make that happen, the adulting part of you comes in, right? And you're like, nah, that's too frivolous. We can't waste, you know, $1,000 or $1,500 or whatever on a weekend just for us to get away. And next thing you know, it's been 5 years and since the last time you and your spouse like actually got to hang out and have just alone time.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially when you're younger parents and you're not as financially stable as maybe you would be, you know, another decade on or where you have a little bit more money. I mean, this really can be such a boost to your lifestyle, being able to use the miles and points to make memories to just, like you say, spend couples time and just things that you wouldn't do, especially if, you know, you and I are both cheap, as you say. You know, I came into this for exactly the same reason. I would always, you know, I was on slick deals all the time, always finding great deals for things. You know, that's how I approached life. And a lot of things, I'm just not going to pay $500 a night for a hotel. I'm not going to go do a weekend getaway where it's going to cost me thousands of dollars because I don't think it's a good financial decision. But now I can do it, you know, quite often with miles and points. And also as I've gotten older, I found that there are times to spend money to kind of bolster those experiences, but I'm not having to pay for flights most of the time. I'm not having to pay for hotels. And that allows me to do so much more as well. So I think miles and points are so good for anybody, right? And we see a lot of like single people doing it and flying their business class flights and all of that stuff in the space. But it's really, really good for families. And it doesn't really matter if you have to fly, you know, a budget airline or you're flying in coach with your family or whatever you're doing. It's really, like you say, I mean, that's miles to memories, right? But it really is about the memories and what you're creating along the way there.
Absolutely. And the other aspect of it, you know, you talked about when you're younger, right? And maybe you're kind of trying to build your career. And like both of us like work for ourselves. So it's not exactly the same. But I know when I was working in the corporate world, sometimes, you know, you want to be able to attend a conference. You want to be able to do things that's, you know, you're meeting other people in the industry to make those connections and network. Or maybe you're going to some place to get some education to be able to get that next job or to move forward in your career at the same company. But, you know, a lot of company budgets are tight, you know, or maybe they're willing to pay for the conference, but not for the airfare, or maybe they're not willing to pay for any of it. And you're able to convince, submit for like a speaker role at the conference. And then instead of paying for cash for the flight and the hotel to get there, you use your miles and points. And like, that's a way to help build your career. Like we were just talking before we started recording, I'm going to this Real Estate Wealth Builders conference over in Phoenix. And, you know, if I had to pay for it, it's, you know, $300-$500 to fly there, you know, $300-$400 a night for the hotel and all those things. And it's like, okay, is it really worth it versus, okay, well, I registered to speak, so I don't have to pay the conference fee. I'm using my miles to be able to fly there. And then I'm using the hotel points. I'm not staying at the hotel that they're hosting it at, but I'm staying at a hotel around the corner, partly also trying to get my globalist renewed. So, but doing those things where you're able to make those connections, you're able to, for us, present our brand out there, for others to be able to make those connections for building your career and everything. If you didn't have miles and points, a lot of these opportunities may be closed for you, you know, and to me and to you as well, building your financial future and a solid financial foundation to be able to take care of your family, that's like one of the top priorities. And it's awesome being able to use the miles and points to be able to make that happen.
Absolutely. So yeah, let's talk a little bit more about your background. When did you take Bald Thoughts from just being independent? I mean, you're still independent, but when did Bald Thoughts join Boarding Area?
Let's see. I got introduced to Randy from Angelina Cello. And I think that was in like June of 14. And then they weren't accepting new people at the time. So I think it was a full year later is when I finally joined. And at the time, I actually was on the other site. I call it the JV team.
Yeah, prior to boarding.
prior to boarding. And I think after a year or two, then they finally elevated all of us up to the big leagues. At being on Boarding Area, and it's been great. Like Randy's been awesome. The whole team's been awesome. Obviously there's been a little bit of turnover with some of the staff there, but still got a lot of people that have been there for years. And it's just great the way they help us all out and allow us to focus on creating content and not have to worry about a lot of the back office things. And yeah, so I've been doing that again. It was more just like a fun thing, something fun to do for a number of years. Cause I'm also interested in personal finance as far as investing in real estate and insurance and everything. And so I was attending a conference called FinCon, partly just to be able to hang out with a bunch of money nerds like me, right? And then also partly just because I, you know, wanted to learn about how to do my site better and how to do better at social media and all the other aspects of things. And I was going there. Mostly I ended up just hanging out with people and becoming friends with them and talking about money. And then when it was time for me to leave my corporate job in 2018, seeing them and like realizing that they can actually make it a career out of freelance writing, that's what kind of inspired me to, instead of finding another corporate finance job, just saying, hey, you know what, let's move to a lower cost area of living. So we moved from Southern California to Nashville, and my wife could focus on her job. I could spend more time with the kids. And yeah, so I've been freelancing full time for almost 5 years now.
Yeah, and FinCon is where I've seen you most often over the years. There's not a lot of Miles and Points bloggers who go to FinCon, but there's a handful of us, and I feel like we see each other often. And one thing you do so well is networking with everybody and getting to know different people and getting to have interesting conversations with them about not just money, but all aspects of life. And I think that's something I've taken inspiration from in seeing you over the years at FinCon, which, like I said, that's generally where I've seen you, although I've seen you at other places like at Miles and Points conferences or, you know, boarding area stuff. You know, going back to boarding area really quick, I think a lot of people don't really understand how boarding area works, but we all own our sites and we're, you know, independent. They don't tell us what to write. They just basically sell ads and we do a revenue share with them. And then they also do all the technical stuff on the back end, help us with our sites, stuff like that. So it's a great sort of opportunity. And I also started on prior to boarding. So I started in the JV league and worked my way up to boarding area. I think I was the first one to get promoted, but it was, like you said, that it was, everybody was doing such good work there. And I think they quickly realized that it wasn't fair to keep us all off to the side and that, you know, they needed us to infuse some fresh, perspective on the boarding area blogs. And it was great when everybody got there. Some other ones like Points with the Crew was another one at the time. And there was some other ones which aren't around anymore, but you know, it was kind of like we all had this, you know, kind of like a brotherhood or a sisterhood, we all started, you know, down on the lower ranks of boarding area.
That's right.
But
that's right.
I wanted to ask you, like, so I want to talk about freelance versus doing your site, because I feel like there's some interesting stuff there. But let's start with like your move to Tennessee. You moved to Nashville from, I think you lived in what, Anaheim Hills, if I remember right, back in the day. Yeah. So, you know, a very high cost living place, very, very high cost living place. Moving to Nashville, which was significantly lower cost. So obviously that helped out, I'm sure, financially. But how was like the move? How was it, you know, upending your family? You have kids and going there. Was it like everything you expected? Did you miss California when you went to Tennessee?
Well, there's a lot going on there. First off, the main thing that I miss from being here, you know, now 5 years, obviously COVID in there, you know, kind of accentuated things, is missing the friends, right? Like I've lived in Southern California my entire life. And so all my friends from college and high school and different jobs that I worked and everything like that. So I had everybody there. And so I felt like I was surrounded by this huge community of friends. And then when we moved here, I knew like maybe five people, something like that. I mean, not a lot. And then, you know, focusing on the family and you know, being shut down with COVID and everything like that. Like it's been a weird transition as far as being somebody that's like more outgoing and like want to be surrounded by friends and always like having barbecues and doing all these things back where we live in SoCal and not really doing that much here. And even some of the friends that we've met, they've moved. And so it's like in a short period of time, like you became really good friends and you're like, all right, awesome. We're going to hang out all the time and do all these fun things. And like, oh, you're moving? Oh man. You know, so that part's been a challenge. The good thing with the Miles and Points, like I've taken the kids and me back and forth to California a few times and seen people and a few people that live in SoCal come to visit us. So that part's good. And we're now closer to family, so we can drive over to Georgia and stuff to see like my wife's family and everything. So there are some good aspects about that. But when it was time to leave my corporate job, I mean, I was pretty high up there at the bank and I was making good money. Leaving a good solid paycheck was definitely a little scary, right? You know, luckily we had, you know, we'd paid off a lot of debt and, you know, our house had appreciated a lot. And so it made it easier to make a big down payment on the house here and provide some reserves as I'm building up my business and everything. But it was definitely scary. And there were plenty of times where I'm like, man, did I screw up? Did I do the wrong thing for my family and everything? And was I being selfish? You know, you always hear about people in their 40s or whatever doing like a midlife crisis. I'm like, damn, did I do the wrong thing? But overall, I mean, the fact that I get to take my kids to school every day, you know, pick them up, take them to sports and like take them to doctors and all that stuff without having to ask permission from a boss, you know, or getting like, you know, side eye glances from people like, oh, you're leaving early, you know, that type of thing, has been wonderful. You know, I mean, my kids like do like they're in club soccer. And last summer, for example, they were at a camp all day. It was from like 9 to 3. I literally brought a tent out there, pitched my tent, brought my chair, brought a cooler, and had my iPad and keyboard out there. And was just typing away, working on articles. So it's awesome to be able to be there for them while you're also able to kind of continue to moving forward with your business and building your career and everything like that. And so that part's really cool. But back to like the FinCon thing, I think a lot of times you don't really know what it's possible until you see somebody else do it. That's part of the thing with the miles and points, but also with my career now as a freelance writer, if I hadn't met so many people through FinCon and learned about how they do with their careers and how they're, you know, earning clients and creating the articles and doing things in such a proper way, you know, I would have never thought that was something possible, you know, and I may have just jumped right into another finance job. And I think my life would not be as good as far as like the times I get to spend with my kids and everything like that. And so it's a strange, weird kind of windy road getting to where we are today, but I wouldn't trade it at all.
Yeah, it's been really cool to see. You know, I think I remember the early days of when you were just starting to freelance and talking with you at FinCon, and just to see how prolific you've become. And everywhere I see your name in all kinds of big publications. And, you know, occasionally you ask me to quote in an article, which I love too. But you really have not just become a freelancer, but become one of the best in that space. And that's just through hard work. And like you say, networking and building out your portfolio. You know, what would be your best advice? Not that this is about somebody becoming a freelancer, but I'm sure there's people out there who are sort of interested in this. What's your best advice? Is it networking? Is it going to conferences? How do you think somebody should kind of crack into this if they want to try it?
A couple of different things. One, yeah, obviously going to conferences. And I learned something from, there's this guy in Southern California. I can't remember the name of his taco shop, but his name is Wing Lam. And he owns like these really great tacos. Like it's like a lot of like fish tacos and everything. And I was at a under 40s like networking event. And he was presenting up there. And one of the things that him and this other gentleman who was a CEO of a small like local bank, one of the things they said is plant your seeds before you need to sow your, before you need to like harvest your garden, right? And so you're meeting people, you're developing relationships, you're doing all these things far in advance before you ever have to ask somebody for something, right? So that way it's, you know, when I was looking to transition for my career, instead of like, hey, I know I just met you, but do you have any freelance clients that you can like refer me to? You know, it wasn't that. It wasn't like, well, who are you? Like, I just met you 5 minutes ago, you know? And so by knowing so many of these people years in advance without any intention of asking them for anything, it was just becoming friends. By doing that and building those relationships, when it came time for me to look at this opportunity, I was able to talk to him as a friend instead of just like as somebody they met on LinkedIn or whatever. And I was able to talk to him about, well, what's it like being a freelancer? You know, how do you do things and how do you find clients and what do you charge? You know, I didn't even know any of those aspects of things. And so the majority of the clients I get from when I started to even to today, the majority of them are referrals, you know, and by developing those relationships and, you know, one, by not, again, not asking before you've developed that relationship, but also by them knowing you, they know like, okay, Lee's not just some like Yahoo that doesn't really know what he's talking about. And it's going to go over to ChatGTP and get an article that way. He's actually knowledgeable on these different topics and can speak eloquently and is not going to like harm my reputation. Cause anybody that I refer, that's going to possibly come back on me if I'm like referring somebody who's not going to take it seriously and just kind of, you know, throw garbage in the wind, you know? And so you got to plant those seeds far in advance, whether it's freelancing or whether it's another career. And that's why we talked about earlier about attending conferences and developing those relationships and meeting people in the industry that you are involved in, meeting those people, whether you're happy with your job today or you're looking to find a new career or find like a new company, start meeting people today. And that way you're ready when it's time for you to move.
Yeah, that's really great advice. And it's so much of life is about relationships and building it. And not, like you say, not trying to get to know somebody just so you can use them for something else, but developing genuine relationships, which lead into other stuff. Over the years, I've seen a lot of people have personal blogs and Miles and Points, and then they eventually go off. Some of them go to freelancing. Some of them go to corporate jobs like at the Points Guy or, you know, CNN or Forbes or whatever. You have sort of done your freelancing and really build that into a substantial business, but you do also still write on your personal blog on Bald Thoughts. So, you know, what are the differences in how you develop content for those two things? Obviously, on the freelance side, sometimes you'll be assigned things, but what are the differences in the content? And I guess this is more from an audience perspective when they're reading, let's say, a personal blog versus reading a corporate article.
Yeah, I would say a couple of different things. One, most of the time when you're writing for, you know, TPG, US News, Investopedia, Forbes, or whatever, like a bunch of the different clients I have, when you're writing for them, you're not writing in your own voice. There's no first person, you know, anecdotes and those types of things. It's more clinical, I guess you would say. Like you're removing the personality out of it a lot. I mean, you're still being genuine with it, you know, and you're sharing your true opinions on things, but like it's not you. It's Forbes or Investopedia. TPG says this, not Lee says this or Sean says that. And so I generally try to stay away from clients that require you to pitch, but some clients assign and some clients like for you to pitch things. If I do have clients that pitch, one of the benefits of having your own site is if you really want to write about that article or that topic and they don't want to pay for it, like maybe that's just not part of their content strategy or whatever, the fact that you have your own site, hey, that's cool. I really like this article. I really like this idea. I'm going to write about it myself anyways and then put it on my own site. And in the freelancing world, sometimes you get into certain niches or, you know, certain topics and you're like, okay, cool. I like writing about investing. I like writing about insurance and, you know, I write about tax and real estate investing and all these other topics, but I still really like talking about travel. I still really like talking about the miles and points and, you know, how to be lucrative with those and being able to create those memories. So if they're not willing to pay for that, or like, that's just the type of assignments I'm getting recently, I could still kind of return to my love of miles and points by writing on my own site, you know, and especially for the people that are just starting out, sometimes it's hard to find clients because they're like, well, I haven't seen any of your writing. And by having your own site, you can actually create your own content and say, well, here's a few examples of content that I've published, right? And then you can also, as you're developing these relationships at conferences and even just interacting with people on Twitter or Instagram or commenting on their sites, you can develop relationships with people and write a guest post for them. Guess what? Clients have no idea whether it's a guest post that you did for free or you got paid a bunch of money, right? They just know that, hey, somebody else likes the content that you've created and they thought it was worthy to publish on their site. That's a good link that you can share with a potential client as you're trying to build up your portfolio of assignments.
Yeah, I'd imagine it can be a lot more personally fulfilling to write, to have that outlet of that more personal nature of writing, even though, you know, writing freelance can certainly pay the bills. And like you say, you're writing in the voice of whoever you're writing for, but just still having that outlet because you do love it. That's how you approached this whole career, basically, right? That's how you got into it, is through your love of miles and points and travel. And I didn't mention at the top, but you also have a travel podcast, We Travel There, which is all about like destinations, which is really great. People should, you know, go check it out in any podcast app. And you've had experts all over the years from all different kinds of cities talking about places to visit and eat. And so you really have infused your personality in, you know, the things that you love while also being able to, you know, write freelance stuff about, you know, more, I guess, serious topics that are less personality driven. So it's really interesting how you've been able to kind of spread it both ways.
Well, I mean, I guess the thing is, like I mentioned, you know, being more extroverted and everything like that, sitting in my office, I call my office like Vegas without the fun. I have no idea what time it is. There are four walls and I'm just, the doors close even if nobody's in the house. And I'm just sitting here cranking out articles all day and it gets lonely, right? You know, and having the podcast is a great way to just to meet people, to learn about new things, but also having adults around that you can speak to. And so it's been a lot of fun that way. I've actually done over 250 episodes now. So the podcast launched in September of 18, so shortly after we moved. And they're basically just destination guides for a bunch of cities. Like, obviously, you were on for Las Vegas, so that was really great. This week is Newcastle, UK. Last week was the Sunshine Coast of Australia. Next week is Zagreb, Croatia. So it's really cool learning about all these places. The problem is, though, it's like, even for those of us that have miles and points, it's like, man, I'm never going to be able to hit all these locations. And so many of them sound so amazing. And my top 10 of places I want to go to keep changing on a regular basis as I learn about these fun places. And so the good thing is that each of these episodes are designed to inspire people to travel to, okay, obviously we know like Paris is great and London and New York and San Francisco and all these like popular cities that a lot of people think of initially when thinking about where to travel to. And I think with the podcast, I'm really trying to focus a lot on like secondary or even tertiary cities that have a lot of great things to offer, but maybe you've never heard of or not considered because you're like, is it really worthwhile to spend all that money to just travel to that city? And so like one of my favorite examples is Kamakura, Japan. It's about an hour south of Tokyo. And, you know, you and I living here in the US, like maybe you're not going to fly all the way to Japan just to go to Kamakura, but like, hey, I'm in Tokyo. It's only an hour train ride. Maybe I'm going to like carve out a day or two to go down there and check it out. Cause I've heard some really cool things on the podcast about it. And so I think by doing that, it helps expand your travel lens and being able to look at other cities than beyond just like the major ones.
Isn't that where they have the giant Buddha in Kamakura?
I think so. It's been probably 4 years since I did the episode, but
my dad served there. Exactly. He always talks about, he loved the Kamakura. I haven't been there personally, nice. But I think through 250 episodes, you're right. I mean, you have the big cities, but there's so much more in the world to find. And it's so cool that you've been doing it for this long that you're able to kind of find more niche destinations. And like I said, you always have really well-engaged people with great information to share. So I highly recommend that podcast and going through such a backlog now of episodes. I think mine was quite a few years ago when I talked about Las Vegas. But we'll have to do it again because it's changed so much in there. But I did want to talk. Sure. I did want to talk about some travel hacking stuff because I was going through your site, seeing some of the more interesting stuff you wrote on your personal side. And I came across an article which you had just republished, but I guess you had written it a few years ago, called The 7 Deadly Sins of Travel Hacking. And I thought it was really fine, and I think there's a lot of good advice contained within that. And you sort of filter it all through the 7 deadly sins: pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, anger, and sloth. But each one of those has a lesson within travel hacking. And let's start with pride. And this is something that's so prevalent in the miles and points community. And you say it's pride/know-it-all. In the travel hacking world, remember that you're never too experienced or knowledgeable to know it all. I think this is really good advice for life, right, in general. But we all know those people in the space who, they claim they know it all, but they also like lord that over other people, and they don't welcome people as who are newer, and they try to, position themselves as better than or more knowledgeable. And, in the end, we're just people who love to travel, and we're always in life. There's always something you know a lot about, and there's other things that you don't. And being able to humble yourself in all things is pretty good.
Absolutely. And I think also the other aspect of it, because I try to focus a lot on, families that are just getting into the miles and points, and I think a lot of people like you that kind of fit into this forget that we were all once beginners too. Right. And I mean, I used to think I was hot stuff. I had my SPG card, I had my Southwest card, and I had my timeshares. I'm like, dude, I can travel anywhere. I can do anything. And then all of a sudden my wife's like, I want to go to Paris. I'm like, ooh, baby, Southwest doesn't fly there, and that's one of those things, like you're never going to know it all. And by actually working to be able to book that trip, I learned so much about how to get those additional miles and which airlines to fly there and all those other things that sometimes you kind of get, it is good to be humbled. And it's good to remember that, like, look, we all need to learn. And I kind of take that approach even now, even though we've been doing it for so long, that you have to, you're never going to know it all. And so I take the Einstein approach. If I can look it up easily, I'm not going to like commit it to memory. I'm not going to do that. We have a lot of friends that they can spit out the award charts. They can do all these other things. I'm like, I don't know how you do it. You're like Rain Man. I don't know. But, that's not me. This article, I think one of the things I like to do about it is I like having a little bit more fun because, you know, we have so many like blogger friends that they write all about the latest credit card review or like whatever card is giving them the highest commission and they're writing about it. I like to find articles like this that I can take a different slant. That's a little bit more character. That's not just like the basic get the Chase Sapphire Preferred because it's like got a really hot bonus right now, you know? And I think hopefully readers appreciate that.
Yeah, I think so. It gives you a different way to look at it. And, you know, we have our Diamond community, which is about 400 members and just such an incredible group of people that is everything from like the beginners to like some of the most advanced people that are levels above where I'm at. And, you know, just being able to admit that is a fun thing. But the one rule of the group is that you have to be welcoming and you have to be helpful. There's none of that flaming others. There's none of that putting people down. There's no dumb questions. And what we've found over years of doing this is that, you know, everybody has sort of adopted that and it creates a better community. And you don't have to worry about, you know, the person who's been doing this for 10 or 15 years isn't jaded because those type of people just don't work in the community and it just makes it all better, which, you know, brings to the next thing, greed, right? Unwillingness to share. And this is something that's really prevalent in the community. People get a little secret, they get a little deal, and then, you know, everybody's whispering to each other and there's clicks and nobody wants to share this with you. And obviously there's, you know, different advanced plays that people don't want to share, but it can really be difficult when you're new and you're seeing this from the outside. And I think one of the greatest things to do is to share and to help and to be gracious with others who are getting new to this, because it's amazing to see when a newcomer goes from like knowing nothing to like taking trips that they've always dreamed about for their entire lives within, you know, just a few months or a year.
Absolutely. And like I mentioned earlier about being in the miles and points community versus being in the FinCon community, in the personal finance side of things, like they are willing to share everything. And because guess what? Like if you max out your Roth IRA, it's not going to affect me maxing out my Roth IRA, right? Whereas on the miles and points community, you know, they have so many like those scenarios where like, you know, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. And we have a lot of friends among us that they go absolutely hog wild and they do crazy amounts of numbers in some of these deals. And then all of a sudden like, the deal's closed because they blew it up because they went way too wild on it. And that is the aspect that I could understand why you want to hold back some things. But I think the pie is big enough for all of us to be able to share enough ideas. And we just need to have some of those people that are go overboard to like chill out a little bit and like play the long game, not the short game.
Yeah. Those are the people I choose not to deal with in this space. But luckily I found so many really cool people. And like I said, of all experience levels to deal with, whether it's in the Diamond group or elsewhere, there's so much positivity within the community too. That some of those like louder negative voices, I feel like sometimes we focus on them too much, but we do have a great group of people in the community. I'm not going to go through every single one, but one other one I wanted to hit on, and people will put a link in the description to this article so you can read the whole thing because Lee lays out a lot of interesting thoughts for each of these. But, you know, unorganized sloth is, you know, this is something that can be really, you know, dangerous, I guess, in this space, especially if you're new, you're not used to carrying credit card balances, and I don't mean like paying interest, but you're just not used to having balances on different cards. You're meeting spend requirements everywhere. You know, you're not sure when you have to spend by, all this sort of stuff. So staying organized is so important in this space. And you even point out that, you know, people could occasionally get a 30-day late on their credit just because they're not sure, you know, they opened a new card and they forgot about it or something like that. So organization really is the key here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest assets that we all have is our credit, but it's an asset you have to continue to take good care of because it can unravel very quickly. And you can go from something, you having a very nice credit score, getting approved for pretty much anything you want. Next thing you know, you get a 30-day late or, you know, something else on your credit. And now like you're in purgatory for the next several years, right? Because negative credit marks stay on your credit for years. And it can affect your ability to get a job, can affect your ability to, you know, get insurance rates, get approved for a mortgage, get approved for, you know, leasing a, you know, leasing an apartment, all these different factors that beyond the miles and points aspect of things, you know? And so you have to, you have to like sometimes just chill out on these great deals. And because there are so many of them, like it's like almost every month, there's like a new hot deal that's, you know, six figures plus of miles and points, and they're all, it's all great. But if you aren't, if you go beyond your capacity to like actually focus on what's at hand and focus on keeping things accurate, you know, getting those bonuses, you know, as far as getting the minimum spend, keeping everything current and making sure you're not missing any payments. If you lose sight of all that, it's not worth it, because next thing you know, you're getting declined for your mortgage. You know, you're applying for a job at a bank or top secret clearance, you know, for your job, you know, that you're working with the government or whatever. Sorry, you know, you fit all the different criteria, but you have bad credit and you're too much of a risk. We can't afford to hire you, you know, and you don't want something short-sighted to affect your long-term financial future.
Yeah. And this has been a problem I've had over the years. It's just chasing too many deals, or, you know, not knowing what my limitations are. And I think the other downside, now thankfully I've been able to stay organized, haven't had any of the really detrimental things happen. Really the biggest side effect for me was it took away a lot of the enjoyment for miles and points, because when you're overburdened, it's a lot harder to enjoy the aspects of it, whether it's on the earning or the redemption. It feels more like a job. I mean, it is my job. So I guess in some ways that's the case. But I do feel like when you overextend yourself, as much as that deal can look great on the surface, you really aren't doing yourself any favors, because it will become tedious. And, you know, I know people, there was this big play. I've hinted at it about it on the podcast. I can't really talk about it because it's not my thing to talk about. But, you know, that went sideways for a lot of people who are out a lot of money, or they're at least potentially out a lot of money. And I know people who have just been sick to their stomachs. It's affected their home lives. It's affected every aspect of their life. And, you know, sometimes we see that, you know, big payday at the end, or we see all those points we earn, and we don't see the potential downsides of it. And so, that, you know, as you start earning more miles and points and seeing all these more advanced methods of kind of generating spend, whether it's starting businesses or all kinds of other things, you know, it's important to kind of keep your eye on the prize and understand that your financial well-being, your personal well-being, your happiness is important too. And it's not just like unlimited go for the races on everything.
Absolutely. And the thing is, like you mentioned earlier, like this is your job. This is my job. I mean, we're supposed to be focused on all these things, but if you think of like the average person, you know, they got their job, they got their commute, they got their family, whether they have kids or not, and they have all the other aspects of their life that they enjoy. They're not going to spend the countless hours that you and I spend researching all these things, tracking all these things. And, you know, I'll admit I have like probably 45 credit cards, right? But I tell everybody else, do not do what I do. Like the vast majority of people should not get anywhere near that number, right? Like probably stay in the single digits for most people. Getting overwhelmed is easy for a lot of people. You know, we don't have a lot of financial education in the country and everything like that. And the average person doesn't really understand how to control things. Luckily, in our community, a lot of them are much more like financially focused and are good with their credit and stuff like that. But it's easy for some people that are just coming in to get overwhelmed, because you see everybody on Instagram, you see all these different things, you talk to different people, whether it's in the social media or you at a conference, and you hear about all these amazing trips, and like you want that too because that's amazing. And then all of a sudden, like you just get overwhelmed. Like you said, you know, you can apply for a bunch of different cards, and all of a sudden you have to spend, you know, $20,000 in the next 3 months, and your normal expenses are like $2,000. You're like, okay, am I going to miss out on the bonuses, or am I going to overspend in order to be able to hit them? And it's a difficult decision for some of them to make. And sometimes they make the wrong decision. They, you know, get into debt, and it can crater their credit score, or just take months, or if not years, to kind of dig out from that excess spending.
You mentioned social media, and this is a topic I've been wanting to dive into on the podcast, which I'll do on a later episode, but I would love your opinion on this. Obviously, we've seen in the last few years the rise of TikTok and Instagram videos and influencers becoming far more focused in that space on miles and points, whereas traditionally had been blogs and other stuff. And I notice, as somebody who's been doing this for over 10 years, specifically in the miles and points genre, and for 15 years doing it in the travel genre, is there's a lot of like a snake oil salesman on social media in this space. Yeah. There's a lot of people who got their first credit card 3 months ago, and now they're trying to show everybody else how to do it. And they filter it all through the lens of the first class flights. And how do you think people protect themselves from that? Because, you know, on one level, it could be, you know, here's Sean, he's a podcaster, has a blog, and he's, you know, crapping on people on social media. I'm not doing that at all. There are some really great voices on Instagram and TikTok in the miles and points space. But there are so much, I don't want to call it garbage, but I'm going to call it garbage. There's so much of this, like I said, snake oil salesmen, people that just clearly don't know what they're talking about. And then they're trying to sell a lifestyle of something that they just figured out 2 months ago. Does that bother you? And how do you think people can kind of work their way to kind of find the good people on social media?
I mean, it absolutely bothers me because my dad was a bankruptcy attorney, and I saw so many people come through his doors that just got into bad financial trouble because they were listening to the wrong advice. You know, whether it's, you know, you don't have to pay taxes, or, you know, you can, you know, transfer cards from like one balance transfer card to the next, to the next, to the next. And they just get into bad situations. And so I'm very vigilant about any sort of situation like that. And there are people obviously that are on social media that are promoting this lifestyle that they make it seem so easy. Well, first off, it is easy if you have just like one person, right? Like it's pretty, I mean, you know, from like searching for award space, if you only have one person, you can probably find that flight pretty easy, right? And you get one or two cards and you probably have enough miles to be able to book that flight. Now, if you want to bring somebody with you, or you have some kids and that you want to bring with you as well, trying to find two, three, four, five or more like spaces, you know, sorry, that's a lot of miles and points to earn. And just sometimes the airlines don't have that space available, you know? And that's one thing that I'm always worried about, is that the people that are just getting started, they get turned off because they think it's so easy because of some of these videos that people do. And then they go to try it and they get flustered. You know, it's the same thing even with some of the blogs as well. Like some blogs make it seem so easy and everything like that. But you have to be truthful with people and say, look, this isn't going to be like an overnight thing. Sometimes it's going to take a little while. And I always tell people, I said, look, even if you can only afford to pay for like one direction of the flights for your family, or you can only afford to pay for like two or three of the nights of the 7 days that you're going to be gone, it's still a win. You've still saved $500, $1,000 or more dollars on your vacation, and you're able to travel this year instead of waiting 2 or 3 years to be able to save up all that money to be able to make that trip happen. And so I don't like the fact that they make light of the aspect that it is a little bit more effort than what they make it seem. You know, it does require, like anything, it takes a little bit of effort to get a good reward, you know, and the travel that we're able to do is a fantastic reward, but it does require a little bit of effort. And it's not just get this one card, go buy some gift cards, cash them in at Walmart, and, you know, and then pay off your card. Like a lot of these things that we've done in the past, they're no longer like easy to do. And it's just not all, you know, sparkle and glitters that they put it on social media.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's so much to kind of to learn about that. And you know, I guess you're right. In blogs, there's always been that sort of thing too. I just feel like on social media, especially with short form video taking off the way it has, that you see a lot more of this and you don't see the nuance. And I think you make a great point. People can travel within their goals and means. They don't have to aspire to fly a business class. And like one of the first big trips we took, when I was in the miles and points, was we backpacked around Europe for 3 months in early 2013 with my son. And I didn't have enough miles and points to get every hotel for free, but and we stayed in a lot of guest houses and local places. And then when we wanted to stay somewhere a little nicer, there was a good redemption, we used our miles and points. So probably 25% of where we stayed was for free. And then we were still sort of backpacking around for the rest of it. And that worked really well. And that was fine. And it was still great. And, you know, now 9 years later, or 10 years later, the time flies, Lee, I'm telling you, you know, this last year and a half, we've been semi-nomadic. Last year, I spent 7 months on the road, and almost every single hotel and flight redemption was paid for with miles and points. It took a long time to figure out how to do that. it took a lot of time to strategize, and COVID helped a little bit because it didn't travel. So I was able to build up some balances and do stuff like that. But it doesn't really matter whether you're spending 7 months like I did and paying for almost everything, or you're able to pick up a hotel night here or there. It's all still good. And to stay within your limits and your bounds. And I think that's absolutely good.
I was going to say that. I mean, part of the other aspect is obviously credit cards are a great way to get a bonus and get miles and points. One of the other articles that we kind of talked about was the automatic miles millionaire. Again, it's from a personal finance standpoint of the automatic millionaire. It's using those strategies of automating as much of your life as possible. So that way you're earning miles on everything that you're doing, not just relying on getting a new card, because so many of these banks limit the number of cards you can get, or they make it so hard. I mean, like I applied for a Barclays card for my business at the beginning of March, and I went through an entire process for like 6 weeks to get that card approved. And finally they said, sorry, we can't approve you because you don't have a business statement with your home address. I said, yeah, I don't put my home address on things because I don't want random people knowing exactly where I live. And they're like, sorry, unless you have a utility bill or a bank statement with your home address, then we can't approve you. And so we took that entire 6 week process and couldn't get it approved. And so all these banks have weird rules, especially now, you know, the economy is a little shaky, you know, a little uncertainty as far as what's happening over the next probably 6 to 12 months. You know, getting a new card isn't like a sure thing like it used to be, you know? And so you have to be a little bit more creative, and you have to take advantage of the different avenues that are out there to be able to get miles and points and maximize the rewards on the money that you're already spending.
All right. Great advice. And yeah, you definitely have an interesting article in the automatic miles millionaire. I'll also put that link in the description because we're running out of time as far as what we're getting to cover. And I did want to cover one last thing with you, which is just family travel. I guess this is a little inspiration from We Travel There, but you travel all over with your kids, but I know you've done a lot of travel within Tennessee and in that area, Nashville, you know, Memphis, Gatlinburg, which is my favorite because I love Dollywood, Lee. It's such an amazing park. But what are some of your favorite places around Tennessee for, not just for family travel, but just in travel in general that maybe people don't know about?
Well, I would say, one of the biggest ones that we've really enjoyed is going up to like the Bowling Green area of Kentucky. It's weird for me coming from California because, you know, my commute from Anaheim to downtown LA was an hour and a half, right? So now from being here in Nashville, an hour and a half north, I'm in Kentucky. An hour and a half south, I'm in Alabama, right? And so it's weird that I can drive and be in other states, you know, quicker than I can get to work in my old job. And so the Bowling Green area is pretty amazing because they have the Mammoth Caves National Park, and like the caves are just absolutely amazing. It's like a whole different world under there. And I think the last time we went, there's probably like 16 to 18 different like tours just from this one cave, because it's the largest cave complex in the world, or certainly the North America, and they've not yet found the end of the cave. So that just blows my mind that they know all about the cave, stuff like that. But there's like probably something like 300 or 400 miles of trails under the ground, you know, and that's really cool. This other place that's like just outside of there, it's called Horse Cave. They have a place that it reminds me of our visits to Australia. It's called the Kentucky Down Under. And they actually, you can walk in there and there's kangaroos bouncing around and you can feed them right out of your hand. And so just cool experiences like that I'm always looking for, like that kind of the educational / entertainment like type of situations for my kids. And so, yeah, like amusement parks are great and those types of things, but being able to go there and interact with the animals and, you know, I'm not quite yet ready to splurge on an Australian flight for them, you know? And so this is like the next best thing, being able to go up there. And the cool thing, like I said, it's like an hour and a half. So you can come here to Nashville, enjoy all the fun things to do here, but it's only an hour and a half away. And so you can like drive up on a Saturday morning and come back Saturday night, or even spend the night and kind of enjoy our entire weekend up there. And so that's really cool. You mentioned Gatlinburg. One of the things I love there that I've really kind of experienced is they have I think either 6 or 7 different mountain coasters. And I love thrill rides and all the roller coasters and everything like that. But the mountain coasters, they're actually just fed off gravity. And so they have like a, you know, like at the beginning of a normal roller coaster brings you to the top. And then it's just gravity and you either letting go of the brakes or controlling the brakes controls your speed going down. And they are a ton of fun. I mean, you don't think like, okay, well, it's a small ride. It's a short ride. It's not going to be that fun. They are actually really thrilling. And I would put them right up there with just about any other roller coaster at any of the amusement parks. It's just great fun. I mean, it's like, if you think of like, what's it called? Like, I'm trying to think of the toboggan ride over at Disneyland, the Matterhorn. It's basically just like the Matterhorn, but it's on the side of a mountain over there in Gatlinburg. And there's like 6 or 7 of them. They're really cool. We actually did all 6 of them in one weekend. And so my wife was probably like tired of me driving between all the different ones, but it's a lot of fun. But the other aspect of it, it is right there on the entrance of the Great Smokies National Park. And unfortunately, I'm not going to sign up this year, but next year I'm going to do it. They actually have a synchronized fireflies. And so like these fireflies come out around like the middle to end of May to beginning of June. And they have a lottery as far as being able to apply to be able to get your tickets. And it's just from what I've understand and from pictures I've seen and everything like that, it's just such a cool experience. The park itself, there's no cost to enter the park because there was actually, I guess it was privately owned. And when they gave the land to the states and to the federal government, they basically said, look, all these roads are paid for, but as a condition of us giving you this all this land, you can't charge entrance fees to the national park. And so it's great on the budget. It's great as far as being able to go to all the different hikes and going through the trails and everything. They do now charge for parking, but that's pretty easy. It's like, you know, $6 for the day or something like that. So it's like 180 degrees dichotomy between Gatlinburg and the national park. Because Gatlinburg is like, if you think of glitzy and neon signs and all these other things, I think literally there's like 4 or 5 Ripley's locations there, you know. If you ever thought, like, looked up tourist trap in the dictionary, it would be Gatlinburg. Yep. Right, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. But it's like everything is touristy and everything like that, and then just steps away is one of the best national parks you know, in the U.S. and it's kind of cool having both of those right there.
I totally agree. That's been my experience there in Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg. You have, it almost feels like International Drive in Orlando, where you have all of the mini golfs and go-kart tracks and of that sort of crazy family stuff. As you point out, they have these mountain coasters, which are often beautiful in these locations kind of outside of there. And the mountain coasters are in a lot of like ski resorts now. They've really spread it across. But my favorite part of being in that area is the national park. And I've done some incredible hikes to like waterfalls. And, you know, it does give you this sort of kind of all-in-one family vacation, right? You can have, you know, Dollywood itself is probably one of the best amusement parks in the country. It's a really cool park. But outside of that, you have all the touristy trap kind of things. So it's almost like you're in Orlando a little bit. And then you just go, you know, just down the road and you have just a spectacular national park. And I think that's the best part of it, honestly. I don't care about all the tourist trap. I like amusement parks. I like Dollywood, but I don't care about go-kart tracks and all that stuff. I do care about beautiful hikes. And I don't remember the name of it, but I remember this one incredible hike we did to this giant waterfall. And it was like, this was back in 2007. And it was the first time I really think I saw like a massive waterfall in person on a hike like that. And it will always be special to me. So yeah, so much to do in that area. And I'm glad you were able to share some of your now local Tennessee wisdom from being out there for the last 5 years. And I really think there was a lot of cool things that you covered. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about some of these different ideas that, you know, maybe give people a lot to think about here. Where can people find you when they're not listening to this podcast?
Sure. So baldthoughts.com is where I write on a regular basis, talking about our latest travels, some of the cards I have, you know, experiences we've taken, you know, fun articles like, you know, the 7 Deadly Sins of Travel Hacking, the Lee Method of Travel Hacking, and all those other fun types of things that are just beyond like the ordinary. But every Monday is the We Travel There podcast comes out with a new episode. The way we do it now is every, like for 9 weeks, we do different destinations. And then on the 10th week, we do a special topic, you know, talking about like recently. It was like Spencer Howard came on about talking about how to save money on flights. I had somebody come on and talk about the Alabama Civil Rights Trail. And then every probably 20 or 30 episodes now, I have my kids come on. We talk about something, and it's just kind of cool to memorialize their thoughts and their voices based on their current age. And, you know, as we talked about, like, they grow up so quickly, and it's just kind of fun to be able to kind of hear what they have to say and the advice that they can give to other kids and other families.
Absolutely. And yeah, thanks for that. Definitely check out Bald Thoughts and We Travel There. And if you're reading a personal finance article, look at the byline, because there's a good chance that Lee wrote that as well. Next time you see a big article from one of your favorite big sites. For this podcast, just as a reminder, you can find everything at mtmpodcast.com. Links to subscribe, apply for cards, all of that stuff, mtmpodcast.com. Thanks again, Lee, for coming. Really, I totally enjoyed this conversation. I hope to see you at FinCon later this year.
That'd be great. Yeah, I'll be there. And I submitted a proposal to speak, again, trying to keep my costs low. And hopefully you'll see me up on stage. And it's been great talking to you again as a freelancer. It's nice to be able to talk to adults every once in a while and give me a little bit of a break from just typing on the keyboard.
All right. Well, thanks again, Lee. Talk to you later.